with a certain level of responsibility. Kate seems to wave this away. Look, last night started off as just us girls hanging out, but then some other friends dropped by. Dane had beer left over from his family's 4th of July party, and they were drinking it. I'm not going to police the girls. They can make decisions for themselves. The place is trashed, and there are, like, at least 20 drums of ice cream that have been ruined in there by exploding beer cans. So take it out of my pay. Do you even care about this place? Oh, here we go. Because you're always late, the stand looks like hell, everything's slipping. And now this? Throwing a party here and leaving the place trashed? I don't get it. I thought you wanted to be head girl. Of course I did, and we both know I deserved it. So why are you acting like you don't care about it? And when I try and talk to you about work stuff, you completely shut me down. Because it's not exactly easy doing things my way when I have you watching over me all the time, judging me for everything I do because it's not the way you would do it. You're right. I would have never, ever thrown a party like this. And I definitely wouldn't let newbies drink. They're barely out of 8th grade, Kate. The head girls didn't let Amelia and Kate drink until they were juniors, and even then they kept a close watch on them. Kate shrugs. So what do you want? An apology? If anything, you should apologize to me, to all of us girls, for ruining our summer. Amelia feels an apology bubble up. She does have a lot she's sorry for. But instead, she takes a deep breath and says, Yes, I do want you to apologize, and I want you to promise that you'll try harder, that you'll do a better job, that you'll work hard and respect the traditions and take it seriously, because this place is going to fall apart unless you do. Are you kidding me? Mead Creamery is falling apart, Amelia. Do you not remember that we almost got washed away during that rainstorm yesterday? Is that a no? Because if it is, I don't think there's a place for you here anymore. It's so suddenly silent that all Amelia can hear is the quiet wheezing of the tired, failing walk-in freezer. Kate starts laughing. Give me a break. Is that a yes or a no, Kate? That's a screw you. Her words do sting. But Amelia simply says, Then you're fired. You don't have the authority to fire me. I'm head girl. This may or may not be true, but Amelia doesn't blink. Take your stuff and go. Kate's laugh turns into a sneer. I don't need this. I'll see you girls around. Her adrenaline surging, Amelia says, Wait. Give me the pin back. When Kate turns around, her face is contorted into a pucker that Amelia has never seen before. A line in their friendship has been crossed that Amelia isn't sure she'll be able to get back over. Kate takes off the pin and sets it on the desk. Then she peels off her polo shirt so she's in just a tank top and drops it into the trash can on her way out, the door whacking against the stand so hard that one of the milk bottles tumbles off its roof beam and shatters. The girls stare in stunned silence. Amelia goes into the office. Pushing her muffins aside, she lays her head down on the desk and cries. Amelia's not sure exactly how long she spends crying, but when she reemerges from the office, she has a splitting headache. But the three newbies are still there, having cleaned up the mess from the party. And not just them. All of the girls are there now, minus Kate. Jen notices Amelia first, elbows Monsey, then all the girls turn to face her.
I'm so sorry, Amelia announces, her voice breaking. I never wanted to fight with Kate in front of you. Never mind, fire her.
Liz says, It's okay, Amelia. Sophie says, You were right. Kate wasn't a very good manager. She was super fun,
Monsi adds. But not, like, good at the job part of the job, Sophie says.
It was worse than you know, actually. Kate was always late with the schedule.
She basically never did any chores. We seriously don't care if you're dating Grady. That's your business.
Amelia shakes her head. No, I made a promise, and Grady is my boss. It's not right.
Bern shakes her head. You're the boss of this place, Amelia.
Amelia manages a weak smile. It would be the ultimate compliment, if not for the fact of everything. Chapter 42. Amelia is still waiting for word from Grady when she climbs into bed for the night, and she's trying everything she can to relax until he reaches out. A scented candle flickers on her nightstand, and she's wearing a calming face mask that she'd forgotten to use before prom. But as she lies back on her pillow, eyes closed, the wet mask sheet clinging to her face, a lump bobs tight in her throat, making it almost impossible to swallow even the smallest sips of her chamomile tea. The cruel reality is that, no matter how things go with Grady and his dad, Amelia has already forever lost the summer she'd hoped to have, one that would reinforce her friendship with Kate, make it strong enough to withstand the distance and change that college would bring. In fact, Amelia's not sure if she'll ever hear from her best friend again. Yes, Kate was a terrible head girl, but had Amelia really been any better? Using Grady's promotion of Kate as a band-aid, hoping it would smooth over their problems so she wouldn't have to tackle them head-on. Amelia's letting things slide only made the problems worse. In that way, hadn't she set Kate up to fail? After the mask is done, she dabs her face dry with a tissue and tosses it into her wastebasket. On her night table, next to the candle, is Molly's diary. As Molly's entries have closed in on the end of the war, Amelia has hesitated to keep reading, knowing the terrible things coming, both in the war itself. Amelia still feels sick thinking of her country dropping a bomb that instantly killed over 80,000 innocent people in Hiroshima, as well as the most painful parts of Molly Mead's life, the death of Wayne Lumsden. But tonight, she decides to read straight through until the very end, wanting to poke the bruise. There is another gap in Wayne's letters, one that Molly attributes to their fight about her ice cream. Initially, Molly is indignant, filling the pages of her diary with news of how business is booming. As summer comes to a close, it's as if clarity returns to Molly. August 14th, 1945. When the news came in from the president on the radio, Japan unconditionally surrenders, every girl in the stand froze. Tiggy and I had been scooping two cones. She dropped hers right on the floor, rushed forward and hugged me. The others pushed out the door, screaming, crying, grabbing the folks in line who hadn't heard. People in the cars turned up their radios. Horns were beeping, people sprinting. Mother and Daddy came running down not 5 minutes later. Mother lifted her skirt and danced the jitterbug, which I didn't even know she knew how to do, with Daddy right there in the stand, and they kissed like newlyweds. Everyone rushed out to Main Street, all of Sand Lake. I've never seen the streets so full, the entire town hugging and weeping and cheering in the street. I had so many conflicting feelings, all those innocent people killed. But the war was over now. No one else would die. Our boys will come home. My brothers and Wayne back, as if they never left. I wonder when I will hear from Wayne. Will he still want to marry me when he gets back? Or have I ruined things between us? When the stand closes at the end of August, Molly has nothing to occupy her mind. Every entry is full of worry about Wayne, regrets, and fears.
In her last entry, dated September 2, 1945, Molly described how she invited the girls for ice cream at the lake to celebrate the official end of the war. But the night was unseasonably cold, and the girls were all worrying about their figures again. On the back of that page, there is a newspaper announcement, neatly clipped and taped inside, dated almost exactly 1 year later. It is for a memorial service at Holy Redeemer in honor of Wayne Lumsden, war hero, declared missing in action. The rest of the diary's pages, nearly half of the book, are left blank. The buzz of Amelia's phone wakes her up. Her room is dark. The candle has burned down to nothing. It's Grady.
"I'm turning onto your street. Can you come outside?"
She texts back. "It's 2 in the morning. If my parents catch me sneaking out, they'll kill me." Though Amelia recognizes that in a few weeks, she'll have the freedom to do whatever she wants.
"Please."
The waning hope in Amelia's heart twists into something tighter. "Okay." She quickly pulls on a pair of shorts, then tiptoes downstairs in the dark. Her mom is in bed, but her dad has fallen asleep in the den, an infomercial flashing colors on the walls. From the front window, Amelia watches the pink Cadillac creep slowly past her house and park on the other side of the street. Grady kills the lights. Opening her front door as quietly as she can, Amelia slips outside in her bare feet. The asphalt still feels warm from the day. Grady reaches over and unlocks the passenger door for Amelia. She climbs in, and before the interior lights click off, she sees the redness on the bridge of his nose, the back of his neck. "You're sunburned," she says, touches his arm gently with her fingertips.
"I was so nervous, I forgot to put on sunscreen."
But what is Grady feeling now? Amelia searches his face for any happiness, any relief, any glimmer of success. He manages a tired smile, which Amelia clings to as a good sign, and she asks him, "How did it go?"
"Everything was great for the first 9 holes, he tells her. "I was basically doing exactly what my dad said, trying not to get emotional. I laughed at all his jokes, listened to college stories I've heard a million times over, and purposely screwed up almost every one of my putts. And he kept saying to me, 'Isn't this nice?' and 'Isn't this great?' and 'We have to get out here more often.'"
Grady rings the steering wheel. Guiltily, he says,
"I hate to say it, but it was nice, pushing everything aside and getting along with him."
"Believe me," Amelia says quietly, "I get it."
"Once we hit the back 9, I started making my pitch. Casually, you know. I explained the situation to him. Told him that if he loaned me the money to cover the repairs and a new walk-in freezer, I'd be willing to implement all his business ideas. Scoop size, price increase, salary cuts. And I promised I'd pay him back, with interest, basically double the sum and give him 50% of all the profits until then."
Grady swallows. "And the ice cream?"
"I said that was the one change that I couldn't entertain."
At this, Amelia impulsively leans forward, takes Grady's cheeks in her hands, and kisses him. He kisses her back, his hands slipping up to her neck and into her hair. When she tries pulling away, he leans forward, holding his lips to hers, extending the kiss for a second, 2, 3, like he doesn't want it to end. When they finally pull apart, Amelia learns why.
"He's not going to loan me the money, Amelia."
She's taken over by a helpless, shivery panic, not unlike the moment when the safety bar clicks down on a roller coaster and there's no getting off. "Because of the ice cream? I mean, what if you found another dairy? There has to be someone who will sell you the ingredients for cheaper. Maybe..."
"No."
"Well, did you talk about your mom? Tell him how important this was to her? Did you tell him how you almost cried tasting Home Sweet Home? She shakes her head. You should have gotten him to eat some that day he came here. Maybe then he'd understand.
Grady is starting to look frustrated with her. It's just not a good business decision. The profit margins are small, and there's so much work to be done on the building. There are other things I didn't factor in either, which my dad brought up, like that no one is going to be living in the farmhouse all winter.
So hire someone to take care of it. Or you could rent it out.
And then what? I'm supposed to come back here every summer for the rest of my life?
He avoids looking at her when he says,
If Molly hadn't died, I'm not sure she could have kept this place going another year. In some ways, maybe it lasted as long as it needed to. As long as she did.
Let me guess, because you're listening to your dad, he's going to send you back to Truman and reinstate all your credit cards. Is that what you really want?
No.
So the stand can be your freedom.
I know. I've decided to sell the property.
All Amelia can do is blink. Grady left to try and save Mead Creamery, and he came back ready to sell the entire place.
Look, I spent the whole drive back to Sand Lake trying to think of a way to make this work. I think I got so wrapped up in this place and with you and proving myself to my dad that I wasn't thinking clearly about the practicalities. I don't want to be a businessman.
What? He seems to understand that she's whiplashed.
I'm going to sell the stand and use that money to pay my own way to Truman. I'll go back on my terms. I'll be out of my dad's pocket forever. I'll be able to find something I love.
Desperately, she says. But your mom...
My mom was not a Mead, and I know she would want this for me.
So that's it. It's over. How much do you think you can get?
It sounds crass, asking, as crass as it would be to curse. I'll get enough to cover me until I graduate, and hopefully a little extra.
When?
If I make a deal, it'll be for the end of the summer. The stand will keep running. I figure if the big freezer quits, we can use the one in Molly's basement and just run stuff down as needed.
He looks up at her.
I wouldn't cut this summer short. I know how important it is to you.
Amelia puts her hand to her heart, needing to make sure it's still beating.
Amelia, you have to know how sorry I am that everything worked out this way. I really wanted to save this for you.
I know you did.
She gets out of the car and slams the door, because he didn't. Because if he really believed in Mead Creamery, he would never think of selling it off.
And that's all there is to it. Chapter 43. Amelia stands at the office window, watching as Grady speaks with a local realtor and another man drives a stake into the rain ditch running alongside Route 68. A for sale sign. Grady turns and walks into the office.
I need to go out for a while, but I left the front door open if you need to get in.
Thank you, Amelia says coldly.
Amelia.
But Grady doesn't say anything more, because what is there to say? Once he's gone, Jen knocks on the door. Amelia? Someone's asking for the head girl outside. Amelia stands up, straightens her shirt. There's someone at the left service window, an old lady with a cane, dressed up in Sunday clothes, buttons, and stockings. Amelia walks to the window, unhooks the latch, and slides it open. Can I help you? The old lady doesn't answer her. Instead, she looks past Amelia, into the stand, and clicks her tongue.
Not a thing has changed.
Not yet, Amelia thinks.
I used to work here a long time ago.
Oh, well, welcome back. Amelia leans forward on her elbows, forcing a smile to her face. I'm Amelia.
I'm Teresa Wolfe, but the girls used to call me Tiggy. I was Molly's best friend.
Amelia's mouth drops open. Tiggy? She's always assumed Tiggy was dead.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to meet you.
She reaches out for a handshake. Tiggy's skin is loose and cold, and though Amelia tries to hold her gently, she clings to her with excitement. But as she lets go, that excitement gives way to dread. Amelia worries that Tiggy might not know that Molly has died, that she'll have to be the one to break the news. She forces a swallow.
I'm not sure if you heard, but...
Oh, yes. My granddaughter sent me the obituary. I got ill and couldn't make the funeral. If I hadn't promised my friends here the best ice cream they ever tasted, I don't know if I could have gotten a ride out today.
Amelia didn't realize before, but Tiggy's brought a nurse with her, a short man with dark hair and a mustache who is carefully and gently assisting her. And there's a white transport van from a nursing home parked off to the side, near the picnic tables, where a woman is standing watching them. She waves when she sees Amelia looking.
I figured this might be the last summer of Home Sweet Home. Can I have a small cup?
Tiggy shuffles backward a little so she can take in all of the ice cream stand. Amelia grabs her scoop and opens the dipping cabinet. Even though Tiggy asked for a small, she gives her two big scoops and makes chocolate sundaes for both Tiggy's aides. Tiggy tries to pay, but Amelia waves her off. On the house, she declares. And Tiggy, I hope you don't taste a difference. I've been making the ice cream myself since Molly passed. Tiggy closes her eyes and takes a lick off the top.
It's like I'm 17 again.
I'm so glad.
And you're head girl, Tiggy asks.
I am.
Where's your pin? Tiggy asks, suspicious.
Oh, Amelia says, looking down at her collar. I guess I forgot to put it on.
This is a lie, but Amelia didn't feel right putting it on after firing Kate. As if that were the reason she'd done it, simply to take the power back.
What a shame, Tiggy says.
Amelia thinks at first that Tiggy is referring to her missing pin, but then she feels something on her shoulder. Tiggy has lifted her cane and stuck it inside the stand. It rests on Amelia's shoulder, as if Tiggy were setting up a trick shot on a pool table. Turning slightly, Amelia sees that Tiggy's got the rubber tip lined straight up with the photo of Molly and Wayne.
Yes, it's very sad, Amelia agrees.
Sadder than you know,
Tiggy answers cryptically. Except Amelia does know. She's read Molly's diary, cover to cover.
Well, Amelia says, I'm glad you decided to come visit. You heard right, I'm afraid. This is going to be the last summer of Mead Creamery.
Well, you ought to take that picture down now that Molly's gone.
Do you want it? Nobody will mind if you take it.
Tiggy laughs heartily.
Me? Want that? Lord, no.
She looks over her shoulder to make sure no one is behind her.
Molly would kill me for telling anyone this, but I never forgave that son of a bitch.
Amelia's eyes go wide, and Tiggy's eyes, old and watery and cloudy as they are, twinkle. She leans in close.
Have you ever held on to a secret for so long that you nearly burst?
Yes, Amelia answers without hesitation. The fact that she is in possession of Molly Mead's diary. For Tiggy, this seems to be the right answer.
The story of this place, of those two right there, it's not what you think it is.
Amelia feels unsteady. She knows the story. She knows it straight from Molly's own pen. So what could Tiggy be referring to? Tiggy shakes her head, puts a finger to her lips.
I've already said too much. You shouldn't speak ill of the dead. But I've always hated that she kept his photo hanging up after everything that happened.
She did it because she missed him,
Amelia answers automatically. Because when she was making ice cream, it was as if...
Amelia's rote performance comes to a halt as she sees Tiggy rolling her eyes, almost bored.
Yes, yes, dear. I know that story.
That story. As if there were another one.
We didn't know her, Amelia says apologetically. Not really.
People knew what she wanted them to know. Being a war widow is very good for business.
It feels almost crazy to say out loud. So Wayne didn't die in the war?
Tiggy looks around again, the secret almost on the tip of her tongue.
Oh, heck. I might not live to see another summer. And what good is a story this delicious if you don't share it?
Chapter 44. Tiggy enters the office and settles onto the yellow love seat, rubbing both hands across the fabric. Amelia pulls up a chair close to her, and they sit across from each other, one of the first Mead Creamery girls, opposite one of the last. And as Tiggy relays the story, Amelia is easily able to picture it, playing like a movie in her mind. How, at first, Molly did think Wayne was dead. How depressed she'd been. How she blamed herself. How guilty she felt that they'd been fighting.
The strange thing is that no official word ever came, but we thought it was only a matter of time.
But near Christmas, Tiggy and Molly had been together in Molly's basement, listening to records and wrapping presents, and Wayne came in through the side door.
I don't know where he spent those months since the war ended, but he'd clearly been injured, Tiggy says. He was walking with a limp.
Molly was so shocked she clung to him, and Tiggy, even though she and Wayne had had their differences, rushed over to him too. But Tiggy could tell right away that something was wrong with Wayne.
He had wild eyes, she says.
When he saw Molly's setup in the basement, it was as if he'd caught her cheating. He told her in no uncertain terms that he wanted her to give up the ice cream stand. He wanted one normal thing back, the life they were supposed to have together. Tiggy continues.
She thought he was joking at first. We both did. And Wayne took great offense at our nervous laughter. He said Molly didn't have to work anymore now that he was back. Perhaps it was because he and Molly had been out of touch so long, but she told him no, straight away. She said, no, I will not. And I think he just about fell over because she'd never spoken in such a way to him before. There was more argument, and they were both struggling to keep their voices down, and eventually Molly stormed out.
Wayne followed her, quick, like a hunter.
That's when I began to get scared, Tiggy admits. I was grabbing him and begging him to please calm down. He lit a cigarette, and they continued to fight, and he threw his cigarette aside. A few minutes later, we saw smoke. The barn had caught fire.
Molly screamed, Wayne, help me, because all the Mead's dairy cows were inside. And Tiggy says Wayne just stood there, frozen. Do you think he did it on purpose? Amelia asks. She sighs.
I'm not sure. I ran up and put my hand on Molly's shoulder to let her know I was there. Come on, I said, pulling her back to the house, saying we needed to wake her dad and her brothers, even though I knew it was already too late. And Molly looked at Wayne and said, go. And that's just what he did.
Amelia holds herself. She can imagine how scared Molly must have been. But also, she's in awe of Molly's strength, her presence of mind. Tiggy stares off, unfocused, for a second or two.
I once asked Molly what she felt, seeing Wayne go. And do you know what she said?
Amelia can barely breathe. What?
She said, Tiggy, I felt free.
Tiggy shakes her head wistfully.
I suppose it doesn't matter what people thought of her. Molly certainly didn't care. It's just my pride in her getting the better of me.
She looks down and touches her ice cream gently with her spoon.
Did you know she traveled the world? She took me on my first trip to New York. It was after my second son was born, all expenses paid, on her dime, for a week. We visited all the museums and sites. We went to the top of the Empire State Building. We saw Once Upon a Mattress on Broadway, and I got my playbill signed by Carol Burnett about a month before she was nominated for the Tony. It got thrown out somewhere along the line, probably by one of my kids. But that was one of the best weeks in my life.
Wow.
And before I moved into the home, I was in Florida, and she came and stayed with me every winter.
We thought she was alone up at the house all those winters, mourning him, Amelia admits, almost embarrassed. Amelia feels dizzy getting these glimpses of Molly's life. For so long, she's been immersed in Molly's past, and that past is what defined what people thought of her.
Tiggy doesn't appear at all surprised.
She didn't care that people pitied her or thought Wayne was some hero,
Tiggy groans.
I just wish more people knew that. Molly lived exactly the life she wanted.
Tiggy takes her last spoonful of ice cream and then gets up. Amelia helps her to the stand door, where Tiggy pauses, holding up a finger to tell the aides lingering at the picnic table that she'll be a minute.
You said you forgot to wear the head girl pin today, but you do still have it, right?
Yes, right here, actually. Amelia fetches it from the desk drawer. She thinks of Kate when she holds it in her hands.
Make sure you don't lose track of that. It's a real diamond in there, you know. Her engagement ring.
Amelia reels as Tiggy hobbles over to the picnic table and, with the aide's help, climbs back into the van. Amelia heads up to the house. Grady's not there. She goes right inside and heads for Molly's bedroom. Not the childhood one, but the one Molly stayed in most recently, down the hall from the kitchen. The one where Grady looked on that first day for the recipes. She has never gone into this room before. Inside, there are pictures of Molly and Tiggy on a beach in what must be Florida, taken maybe 20 years ago from the style of their bathing suits. Another of them at an outdoor cafe, stucco in Easter egg colors. Miami. Molly's bookshelves are lined with travel books, books about places she's been. Inside the travel books are receipts for meals, for souvenirs, for hotel rooms. It seems there were two Mollies. One before Wayne went off to war, and one after. Amelia takes the diary out of her tote bag and flips to the final entry, the announcement in the newspaper for Wayne's memorial service. The opposite blank page, she now realizes, has a ghostly impression of writing on it from someone pressing through the page before. Amelia sees that several sheets have been carefully torn out. Using a pencil, she rubs the tip over the grooves, and a missing entry appears.
December 29th, 1945. Yesterday, sweet Mrs. Duncan broke into sobs when I passed her on my way out of Blowner's. She melted into me when I hugged her, her head resting against my shoulder, her tears dampening my coat. What a tragedy to have lost the barn. She promised to pray for my family, and especially for me and for Wayne, along with the other lost young men, and for the countless other girls in the same situation, forced to pick up the pieces of our shattered dreams and find something to keep living for. When she said that last bit, I did well up out of sheer gratefulness that I escaped that fate. What would my life have been if I hadn't figured out what I did? And just in the nick of time, too. I played the part. I solemnly thanked her, and my mother thanked her, too. I can never tell Mother the truth. Now she thanks God for my ice cream, Without our dairy, my brothers will need to find work elsewhere, and it will be left to me to care for Mother and Daddy. This will be my life through winter, and I am resigned to it, grieving someone lost to me. In some ways, I can do it honestly. I do miss Wayne, or the man I hoped he was. In spring, I can begin to smile again in public, delicately, modestly. And then, next summer, I will bloom. Molly didn't stop living when she lost Wayne. She started. Ice cream didn't save her. Molly saved herself. Everyone thought the stand was a way for Molly to hold on to Wayne, a way to avoid moving on with her life. But it was just the opposite. It wasn't a consolation prize, a thing she settled for. It gave her exactly what she'd wanted. Amelia had hoped Grady would save the stand as desperately as she'd hoped Kate would be picked to be head girl. Why? Because she didn't think she could do either on her own, couldn't rise to those challenges, despite the fact that she desperately wanted to. But maybe the only things stopping her were the limits she put on herself. Amelia goes upstairs and returns the diary to its place under the mattress on Molly's childhood bed. Now she understands why Molly left this room, not for the reasons Amelia thought, but because the room belonged to the old Molly. Before Amelia leaves the farmhouse, she takes something else. Grady's business school textbooks from the trash. She's due for some new reading material anyway. Chapter 45. Amelia crams like it's senior year finals all over again, only for classes she didn't know she was enrolled in. The textbooks are more conceptual than practical, but she still does her best, trying to soak up relevant information as fast as she possibly can. The math is a little over her head, too. There are obviously a million things she'll need to learn. She'll get there. She is at the library when it opens, pulling business books off the shelf, making photocopies of pages, highlighting more paragraphs than not. Hours pass, and she's not even aware. Whenever Amelia watched Grady study, his posture was hunched. He'd groan like reading was physical labor. But every sentence she absorbs gives Amelia energy, motivation. She does her best to put together a business plan, what she might need to get set up and running, how much things are worth, from the equipment to the recipes. So Mead Creamery can't survive in its current form. That doesn't mean it needs to fail. Instead of being rigid, holding on so tightly to the way things have always been, Amelia now focuses on the fresh, the possible. The ice cream will never change, but why couldn't everything else? There's only one thing standing in her way. Money. Over dinner that night, she shares her plans with her parents. I have some news. Grady Mead has decided to sell the Mead family farm. But I'm trying to find a way to keep the ice cream stand going. Her mom and dad share a look. I want to buy the business. Molly's recipes, her equipment, and an old food truck that Grady bought at the beginning of the summer. I thought he was nuts, but now I think that could be Mead Creamery's new home. All I would need is a space to produce... I'm sorry, Mom says. I'm confused. You want to buy the ice cream stand?
What about college? Dad says, baffled. Are you dropping out of college?
Amelia laughs. Of course not. This isn't going to derail anything. I can do it just like Molly did, in the summers. And actually, I might even try to take some business courses at Gibbons. From her bag, she pulls out Grady's dog-eared textbooks. I've been working on a business plan. Mom, I'd love you to take a look at it. It's probably not formatted correctly, but maybe you can help me with that. Amelia pushes the papers across the table. Her mother glances down briefly, hesitant to really look.
This is a thing that I love and I'm good at, Amelia says. I thought you'd be happy for me.
In fact, she's stunned that they clearly aren't.
But there's a whole wide world out there, Amelia. Why stay tied to this place? What if you find a great internship?
Amelia knows it's true that she'll be giving up something to do this. Some of the freedom of a typical college experience, because she'll be dealing with the real issues of running a business. But that doesn't scare her.
This is what I like. This is what I've always liked. And I have the chance to make it mine.
She's pleading, and they are giving her nothing.
Come on, Mom. I know you do this for a living. You help people who need money. I need you to help me.
Instead of leaning closer, her mom sits back in her chair.
Sweetie, I'm sorry, but this is a little half-baked, don't you think?
Amelia's dad stands next to her mother.
Do you know how hard it is to run a business?
At this, Amelia actually smiles. Believe me, I do. I truly do. But they turn from her, begin passing plates and side dishes, passing salad dressing and the peppermill, saying nothing more. Amelia sits back, dumbfounded. Her parents have supported her through everything. Years, months, even weeks ago, this absolutely would have stopped her, or at least given her pause. But not now. She's that sure of herself. After dinner, Amelia goes upstairs with Grady's textbooks. There are other ways of getting money. It doesn't have to be through a bank. She draws her fingers down the index, stopping on the word fundraising. Chapter 46. At the farmhouse the next day, Amelia finds the hallway lined with overstuffed trash bags. Grady?
In here.
She follows his voice into the kitchen, where he is wrapping Molly's dishes in newspaper.
Hi.
He looks nervously at her, like he's been caught doing something he shouldn't.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to deal with this stuff eventually.
He swallows.
If you want anything of Molly's, let me know.
Actually, that's why I'm here.
Okay.
I have a proposition. I want to take over Mead Creamery.
I'm sorry, Amelia. I'm already getting bids on the land.
Sell the farmhouse, sell the land. But I want the ice cream machinery, the rights to the recipes, the truck. I'm going to fix it up, relocate production, and relaunch Mead Creamery as a mobile business next summer.
Seriously?
She's angry, hands on hips.
Don't you think I can do it?
Of course I do. I'm just sorry I didn't think of it as an option, that you'd want to do this. You'd be giving up a lot.
She knows, and in a way she already has. She takes a paper out of her tote bag.
I wrote up an offer, but don't feel like you have to accept it. I know this is really just the first step in negotiating. I want to pay you what's fair.
You don't have to pay me anything. I'll give everything to you for free.
I don't want it for free.
He looks at the sheet.
Where are you going to get this kind of money?
I have a plan for that. But I wanted to talk to you first, to see if you'd even entertain it. I know how personal this is for you, with your mother and all. But my hope is that, deep down, you want this to go on.
She takes a deep breath.
I'm sorry I got so upset. I was putting all my hope in having you save the stand for me. But you've got your own stuff going on. School, your dad, your mom. If I want this place to survive, I need to step up and make it happen.
Wow. I knew you loved this place, but... wow.
It's more than that, I do love it here, but I love the work, too. I love the recipes and the schedules and the girls. I love the customers. I love...
She could go on, but stops when she realizes Grady is staring.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. Amelia, I completely get it, he says. I feel like I've watched you fall in love this summer.
Amelia blushes, and Grady quickly clarifies.
This business, making ice cream. And now that you've found your passion, you're going after it with everything you've got. It's damn inspiring.
The redness in her cheeks fires back up even hotter than before.
You don't think I'm crazy?
Not at all. I think anyone who underestimates you is crazy.
He takes a small step closer.
I know you can do this.
You'll find what you love too, Grady. I know you will.
Amelia really is sure of this, as sure as she is of anything. Grady's a hard worker, kind, generous. He will do great things. He smiles gratefully.
I'm actually excited to go back to Truman, but...
What?
I'm going to miss you, is all.
Her heart speeds up. She, of course, will miss Grady, too. So much it hurts her to think about it.
Well, if things work out like I hope they will, and I'm able to buy the business, you know exactly where I'll be next summer. You can always come back to Sand Lake for some ice cream. On the house.
Nervously, Grady reaches out for her hand.
I hope I don't have to wait that long to see you again. I hope...
He drops his head back and takes a deep breath, summoning his courage.
I mean, I hope that if you come to Truman to visit Kate, you'll let me know.
Of course, if things were good between her and Kate, Amelia would do this, absolutely. But she can't wrap her head around ever visiting Truman without repairing their friendship first. Running into Kate somewhere on campus, not saying hi? The whole idea of it feels unpleasantly surreal, and way more painful, to be honest, than potentially not seeing Grady again.
Kate and I aren't in the best place right now, Amelia admits. I really hope we patch things up, but who knows?
He seems to get it.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Not with Kate, Amelia says, and Grady nods soberly. Except this can't be it. This can't be how they leave things. Hey, look, I know you're over the whole business thing, but I would still love to get your opinion on some ideas I'm thinking about for next summer.
She barely finishes her sentence before Grady's lighting up.
Yes, 100% yes. Seriously, Amelia, you can call me any time you want to talk something through. Really, any time.
Thank you, Grady. I will. They embrace, clumsily, earnestly, and both Amelia and Grady melt into the hug with tangible relief. This arrangement seems, at least for now, enough of a promise to satisfy their craving for more of each other. This summer isn't going to be the end of whatever is sparking between them, but potentially just the beginning.
Chapter 47. Amelia calls a meeting with all the Stand girls the next day. Once she pitches her idea of buying Mead Creamery, they give her what her parents apparently could not, full-throttle approval. And over the next 2 days, each girl finds her own way to pitch in with a talent to help get Amelia's fundraiser page off the ground. They take a million pictures of her, selecting one where she stands out in front of the stand, hands clasped behind her back, mimicking the power pose Grady stuck for the Sand Lake Ledger that first day.
I like it, Amelia says. But one of the newbies shakes her head.
Your shirt doesn't pop. It's too faded. Here.
And she pulls off her shirt, a newer polo, and switches with Amelia. They take the picture again, and Amelia sees she was totally right.
And best of all, they are eager to help her spread the word. They want to tell every customer about Amelia's plans, give them the address of her donation page. But there's one problem. The site isn't yet live. Amelia's been hesitating. She keeps tweaking her essay about why she's seeking money, not because of any lingering doubts, though her parents' hesitation echoes in the back of her mind. Of course the girls would have her back, no question. But what about the adults in town? They all might have trusted Molly Mead, but why should they trust her, a teenage girl? This also feels like an opportunity for Amelia to change the narrative of Molly Mead, to show that she wasn't a sad, old, heartbroken woman. Though her business was small, it afforded her an amazing, adventurous life. Why should that stay a secret? She doesn't want to spill the beans, exactly, but she does want to give Molly her due. And then there's Kate. There's so much Amelia wants to say. This could be for her, too. This feels more important to Amelia than her college essay. Way more important than writing back to Cecilia Brewster. She can feel the words begin to come together, the way she wants to speak about herself, and not just as one of the stand girls. After many, many, many drafts, she finally writes something that truly speaks to her feelings about Molly and Mead Creamery. And this is what she posts. Hello, my name is Amelia Van Hagen. I started working at Mead Creamery 4 summers ago. Those summers were some of the most formative of my life. I could probably fill the pages of a million diaries with the fun I've had, the amazing girls I've met, and the bits and pieces of wisdom I've collected. I say without hesitation or reservation that being a Mead Creamery girl is an experience I'll be forever grateful for. This summer, after Molly Mead's passing, I had the honor of taking over the production of ice cream according to her heirloom recipes. For me, as I am sure for many of you, her life story preceded her. Though I never had the chance to personally get to know Molly Mead, I feel now as if I understand her in a new and deeper way. Through this experience, I've also learned things about myself. How much I love making ice cream. How hard it is to run a business. How difficult it is to take yourself seriously. How easily and quickly everything can fall apart. But Molly's resilience, her unwillingness to submit to expectations placed upon her at the time, and her unwavering belief in herself and the girls who worked for her, have taught me that if you find something you love, you fight for it with everything you've got. No regrets. The Mead family is not interested in continuing the stand in its current form, but I have submitted a business plan that they are willing to entertain to purchase their food truck, the equipment, and the recipes, and relaunch Mead Creamery as a mobile business next summer. I know I am only 17, almost 18, but Molly was the same age when she started Mead Creamery. With your support, I would like to continue her legacy while also beginning my own, and make sure that the Mead Creamery girls who come after me continue to have a place to find themselves, too. Donations come through from people all over Sand Lake. Each one sends a ping to Amelia's phone. The mayor gives Amelia $50. Teachers, neighbors, tourists, former stand girls donate too. There's even a donation from Frankie Coe. Her parents don't give her a dime. But the one that really floors Amelia is $100 that comes in from Kate Kopernik. Her eyes fill with tears, and she immediately hops on her bike. Chapter 48. Amelia climbs the stairs to Kate's front door, trying to keep her hope in check. If she could fix this, if they could somehow come back together, it would be everything. Kate opens the door before Amelia can knock. Me first, she announces. Okay. Kate draws in a breath.
I am pissed at you for keeping secrets. I'm pissed at you for hooking up with Grady, and I'm pissed that you fired me.
She shifts her weight, letting that hang in the air. Amelia looks down.
But holy shit, Amelia, you fucking fired me.
Amelia smiles at the pride in Kate's voice.
You weren't that good of a boss.
I know, Kate says, though not in her confident Kate way. She seems stunned.
I thought I would be. I mean, I think I did some things well, but it was way harder than I thought. And I didn't like how it made me feel to not be good at something. I haven't had that happen to me before. And it got me thinking about Truman, all the smart people that will be there. What if I'm not who I think I am? What if I can't make friends? What if the classes are hard?
It's crazy to think Kate is struggling with the same things Amelia's been dealing with all summer. Crazy, yet also comforting.
You know who you are, Kate.
Kate shakes her head.
I had a terrible nightmare last night, she says.
What?
I was away at Truman, walking around, and I saw you there with Grady. You came to see him, but you hadn't told me.
Her eyes brim with tears.
And it was because I'd pushed you to make a choice, except it wasn't a choice at all. I didn't support you like I should have. I know you were only trying to save the stand. I know you weren't trying to hurt me.
You weren't wrong, Kate. There were times I picked him over you, over the other girls.
Yeah, but how could I blame you for that?
Kate shakes her head.
I didn't have your back. I didn't make it easy on you. In fact, I made it almost impossible because it was a conversation I didn't want to have.
She looks up.
I don't want you to leave for Gibbons and me to leave for Truman and for us not to be who we are to each other anymore.
Kate, that's not going to happen. Please don't be jealous of the stand or jealous of Grady or any of that, because you're the most important person to me.
I shouldn't have said Grady was controlling you. That was insulting. I mean, it kills me to think that Grady was more supportive of you than I was.
Kate sniffles, tears streaming down her cheeks.
You always think you're nothing special, but don't you see how many people seek you out? Frankie Coe picked you to work at Mead Creamery. Molly picked you to be head girl. Grady picked you to fall for. And I picked you as my best friend.
Now Amelia's crying too.
I love you, and I'm so incredibly sorry. Can I please have my job back? I know I don't deserve it, and I know the stand's only open a couple more weeks, but...
Amelia rushes forward and hugs Kate tighter than she's hugged anyone before. It goes without saying that Kate's not coming back next year to Sand Lake, and Amelia will be running the stand in a different way. This really is the end of an era. But a good end, a happy one, the kind best friends like them deserve. Chapter 49. It's kind of incredible how fast change can happen when you let it. In 2 weeks, Amelia has raised all the money she's asked for. The last few $100s came in slowly, and there was a moment when Kate half-jokingly suggested that Amelia hawk the flower pin. Like she would ever. Kate's been reading Molly's diary. Its existence is still a secret between the two of them, and has come to a new appreciation of Molly Mead. Especially when, late one night, Amelia reveals everything Tiggy told her.
I had no idea Molly was such a badass.
Then again, I had no idea you were such a badass either. It's been nice being out in the open with Grady. They've gone on a few dates, and he took her out to a nice dinner when she hit her fundraising goal. But it's also been strange watching the farmhouse get emptied out. Amelia has decided there are two things of Molly's that she does want to ask Grady for. Molly's high school portrait, and the original hand-cranked ice cream maker. She plans to hang Molly's picture up somewhere inside the truck and take the ice cream maker with her to Gibbons. Hopefully it will